Good evening, friends. Welcome back to the Front Porch. My name is Dennis Rogers, and I'm joined by Michael Daniels. How's it going, Mike? How's your alternate Monday?
Pretty fantastic, Dennis. Living the dream, as they say. I'm in the process of moving, so I'm doing a lot of boxing up things right now. So it's been just packing and packing and packing. What it is for the next several weeks, it'll be that way. But yeah, nice alternate Monday here in the Midwest. We missed you at game nights last night. We had we played a game I'll talk about in a bit called Fractured Sky, and then Blitzkrieg World War II in 20 minutes. But it's good times. Yeah, what have you been up to?
Not a whole lot. Still in Indiana. I'll be here the rest of the month. I might make a short little trip next week or the week after. We'll see how that goes. I'm going to Maryland this weekend to see our buddy Fox and watch the Oscars.
Goodness.
And then,
are you driving that way?
No, I'm going to fly.
Okay.
So that I can leave the pup here with my family.
Right, you don't have to. You don't have to worry about that.
Right, right.
People with kids, geez.
Right. Yeah, that's been mainly it. We had ICGCon last weekend.
I was gonna say we did do the big game weekend we had.
Yeah, so it took me a couple days to recover from that. I started out the weekend with some unfortunate timing where I had to do get into the details. My team, part of my team at work, had to do a site rollout, and we did it late to, you know, minimize the disruption to customers. It's an online store. Mm-hmm. We started that at midnight on Thursday night, midnight Friday, yep. Whatever you call that, the midnight between Thursday and Friday, and we're not done until almost 7 in the morning.
Right. Quite a thing, I remember.
And
leading right into ICGCon was crazy.
Yeah, I was able to take most of Friday off, but I still, you know, only slept like 4 hours after being awake for, I don't know, 20 plus hours. Then went straight into ICGCon and eating a lot of garbage snacks. And
it's the worst garbage snacks. I'm not the worst. They were good garbage snacks, but like the worst I've eaten in months and months, I have to say. Not that I eat great constantly, but.
Right, right. Yeah. That was my thought as well. I'm like, I don't, you know, I'm not on any kind of super healthy diet in general, but that weekend was just a constant stream. I mean, there was like one veggie tray, so there were occasionally something, but otherwise it was just chips and pizza, and there was some really good pasta Saturday night.
Yeah, that sauce was clutch for sure.
Consequently, I don't think I played any new games. We can talk about games. There were a couple that I don't play often, or, you know, like maybe I played them before and they seem kind of familiar. So I'm like, well,
yeah,
I don't know that I would consider this a new game. But then otherwise, just stuff I've played before. Played two games of Heat. Played D&D, which was fun.
I saw that happening over there.
Yeah.
Bunch of people.
Mm-hmm.
I did similar, most of my games that I played. So the ICGCon this year, we had a really good location, which is the first time. I mean, we've done Airbnbs for our locations, but it gets big and there's number of sizes we have to manage, and this one was much larger this year with a number of people. And we happen to stumble upon this really great location. Plenty of space, gaming spaces all over. And it checked every box we could have even dreamt of wanting with like movie rooms and chill out, hangout spaces. You know,
it was like a slightly larger raised ranch with the stairs up and down. It's like your old house. But they had added bedrooms and bathrooms all over in the basement and closed in the garage with a pool table and foosball. I think the closest thing I had to a complaint, which is really like could have been trivially fixed, is that there was a small dining table next to a big dining table. And we used both those. I think at one point there was a game on the smaller dining table and we set up, I didn't set it up, but I joined a game with some guys playing on the end of the big table while there was another game on the rest of the table. And I was like, why are three of them
going in this small area?
Why are we playing two games like practically in each other's laps? Like, usually, maybe people didn't bring as many tables as normal, like folding tables. And we walked in we walked in the house and we're like, oh, there's so many tables. We won't need any tables. And that we were a little cramped and trivially fixed. Like somebody could have brought in, I could have brought a table, but I didn't.
We have something that was generally always been kind of an issue when we have these big events, and it's not an issue, it's just kind of a feeling. It's that everyone likes being together, right? Kind of being in the thing. So when we've had it at different locations that have like an upstairs, downstairs, oftentimes people won't go to the other space because, then we're kind of sequestering ourselves away. That wasn't so much at my old house where we had the entire downstairs was a gaming space. But in the past, we still had those same issues that people kind of would rather they start up games in the little bitty spaces that are all together. And also that happens to be near the kitchen where snack and instead of going downstairs. But yeah, that was a funny moment. I was in on that one. And speaking of games, I played Age of Heroes. It's an X-Men game. You can go back and listen to one of our previous episodes where I talked about that a lot more. Definitely evolution of Lords of Waterdeep. It was made by the same designer. And I like it a lot, but it's Lords of Waterdeep is a really, really great game. It's like the classic example of what a worker placement is. Mm-hmm. And it's just the base game by itself. I'm not really into all the extra expansions because they add a lot of things that aren't necessarily as streamlined, in my opinion, for like the main game. But the main game is Lords of Waterdeep is a very streamlined game, you know, straightforward and simple and ramps up at speed and has a timer and ends. And it's just like almost everything that could be right about it with that genre. This one, the designer said, okay, now we're going to put X-Men on it instead of D&D. And then they're going and he... Unlike Lords of Waterdeep, which feels very Euro in that it's just got a bunch of rules and then it puts a skin over it. So it really has nothing to do with Dungeons and Dragons. They just call them warriors instead of meeples, you know. This one, he changed several of the rules to be like follow the theme of X-Men a little bit, which was nice. And it adds a few extra, you know, mechanics to the game. But overall, feels like it moves pretty quick. Everyone seems to be pretty involved. And everyone I've played it with this time and in the past, everyone's really liked it. But it lasts pretty long. It's like 2 hours at least. So I have the same kind of review with that one. I really enjoyed it. I liked it a whole lot. But it's a long game. So I played a game with you called Call to Adventure Stormlight Archives.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that? It was might have been the last game I played.
Yes.
Have you played that before?
I've not played this version. I own the special. I don't know if it's a special Kickstarter edition or what, but I have the King Killer. I don't know if it's called King Killer. It might be called Name of the Wind, depending on when
so
it
this
was
is
made.
A, it's for, a, so Stormlight is the book. Is a book series, right?
Yeah, that's a Brandon Sanderson.
I noted the other two names you said.
Brandon Sanderson's latest epic fantasy series. It's the one with the just massive, like the books are huge. I think one of them has the record on Audible for the longest audiobook.
Wow.
Or maybe longest in fiction or in fantasy, but yeah. It's like, I think it's over 40 hours.
Jeez.
And so Call to Adventure is a, what is it? It's an engine builder, but it's really a sort of narrative storytelling game. Mm-hmm. Where you have your hero, you know, you're playing a hero and you've got two, I forget what they're called. You have three cards and one of them's face down. One is like your background. The other is your, like, I don't know, your characteristics, your attribute or something like that. And the third is your quest, like your
purpose.
Your purpose, right? Your big goal, whatever it is. And then the cards in the market are different things that you do, right? It's like, catch a thief on the streets.
Yeah.
And you do a check. And what this game has that I don't know if I've never seen it before, but I definitely don't see it often. Instead of dice, they have these runes that are little tiles that are just two-sided.
D2s? Yeah.
Kind of, yeah. And depending on your engine, depending on what cards you have in front of you, determine how many of which kinds of runes you can throw, right?
Yeah.
And so you pick those up and you cast them, right? Like roll the bones, kind of. And that determines whether you succeed or fail. There's always a threshold you're trying to reach. And the cards have two rewards. Often there's one that's good and one that's light and one that's dark, right? Vaguely good and evil. And so you do a little bit of set building or set collection. And in this version, in the Stormlight Archives version, there's a villain, Odium, who is from the books. And at the end of the story, once everyone has collected, you can only collect three cards in each act, right? So it's very story and narrative themed. Once one person gets all three, it's like the normal, you know, conditions for the end of the game. In the normal game that I have, you play through those and then there's scoring.
Okay.
Some of the cards have points on them, and you get bonus points for collecting symbols that don't. There are the symbols that the symbols that let you cast more runes, right? Your engine symbols. And then there's another set of symbols that have some synergy when you're playing, but mostly they're for endgame scoring. And this Stormlight Archive version had a special like Stormlight symbol that affects your purpose when you reveal your third card, because your third card is face down. I don't know if I said that, but when you get to the end, then everybody takes a turn fighting the boss, and that determines, it's a little bit like Legendary in that way, where if anybody loses to the boss, then everyone loses. But if you defeat the boss, then you compare points and see who won.
Yeah. So my thought is, 'cause it's the first time I had played any of these called adventure things, and listening to you say it, and I kind of got the feeling from that was that it was a series of games. Now I know that you explained it really well. but I will say the thing I really liked about it is I liked the throwing of the bones. I liked the almost domino kind of dominoes they had. What they were, they were shaped a little bit smoother or not squared or whatever. And that was fun. First off, always fun rolling a bunch of dice, but these weren't really dice. And they are... it was nice because, like, let's say you had magic, right, or whatever, you pull from the magic pool of these runes. Well, there's only like three in there, so you had to kind of decide whether you were going to go for points and get all the magic cards, but then limit yourself to, you know, only so many of the runes being thrown, or spread it out a little bit more. I liked that part of it. That was a fun thing. I've heard you say it, and I heard the other two people playing it call this a narrative game, and it didn't feel narrative to me at all. Like, anything more than any Euro game that just has a skin put on it. Because none of the rules or none of the things that happened felt like I was ever telling a story. Now, the cards do have, like, Chase a Thief, but that doesn't really mean anything. It's just the title of the card, right? And no one was saying, oh, now I'm going to go chase the thief and then run down the corner and do a thing. It was just a card that I got with a threshold of four that I had to get and had a magic icon on it, right? It didn't feel narrative at all in any way. By the first couple card draws, I looked at it and read the thing, like, okay, this is supposed to be a story type stuff. But then by the third card in the first row, I was like, okay, nobody else is paying attention to it, so why does it matter? And it ultimately does not. We played a game called Forgotten Waters, and I'm not a fan of Forgotten Waters, but it's an actual narrative game where you have a story that happens, and each thing, you go around the corner, then the story happens and you read some things, and then people have to make decisions, and then that changes what happens with the story. That's what I would consider a narrative game. So this one feels like it just didn't have that. It might be that because it's using the skin of books that have a narration, but it doesn't seem to actually gameplay wise have that. Also, the villain didn't feel like he was ever present or threatening or that I even had to care through the whole game. We were doing things that, like, took life off of him or didn't take life or added life to him, and I don't think it mattered or we cared at any point. And then at the end, there's like, okay, now we have to go fight this one card in turn order. And we just rolled the bones and see what happened. So it just didn't feel like it had a lot of that. Now, the choices in the game mattered. Like, if you take all that other stuff off, take the skin off of it and just go by mechanics, it was okay. It was just, like you said, it's got a little bit of an engine builder at a minimum amount. And then it has, like, the control of what symbols you're going after. And it also could have been, like, the people we played with, because sometimes it felt like that they were just doing the things and you didn't know what was happening. You know, like, oh, I draw a card. Okay, now I'm going to draw this card. I'm going to put this one right there. And I do it right there. And I put this other card there. And I'm like, I don't know what that did, but it just happened.
Yeah.
You know. So overall, I thought it was fine, but it wasn't necessarily, like... It was fun to play with friends, but I wouldn't pick it up and play it again because there wasn't a lot to it. It didn't feel like to me.
Yeah, I kickstarted it partly just, you know, I love the book, the other
books. Of course,
book
yeah, right, yeah,
that,
yeah.
That they did. And I think, I don't remember if the box I got had, like, the normal cards and the Name of the Wind cards. And I liked the idea of narrative. I think I got it out and taught it to a couple of my siblings one time, maybe. And then I played it or the bass version with the same people that we played with last weekend. And also, maybe had kind of a similar feeling, like the theme and the mechanics are there to make it very narrative, very role-playing, but the mechanics don't force you to do that. Yeah. Which is maybe fine. You know, it's like people who play D&D just for the combat, just for the metagaming, and have no like cooperative storytelling in it. Yeah. Like you can do that. But without that, without doing any of that kind of narrative role playing or whatever, the actual mechanics of the game are pretty simple, you know, pretty yeah. straightforward.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just with some really nice components. And the version that I have came with custom sleeves for all the cards because they're big. Most of them are big tarot-sized cards. And just a really beautiful game with a lot of, you know, like really nice card art and all of that stuff. But, I mean, it doesn't say a lot. Like, it's not saying much to say that I rarely, if ever, have gotten my copy out and gotten people to play it, because that's true of most of my collection.
Yeah, true. Yeah. I mean, it's.
I'm not an extrovert. I'm not a game pusher, right? Mm-hmm. So I'll bring. You know, I've got one bag of games that I carry around, in my vehicle. And I don't want to say half of them, but there are at least five or six that have never been played.
Sure.
You know, I bought them because
a lot of us game players do have that. You have games you want to, but then you just, you know, never.
Yeah. Play. I mean, I'm very unlikely to, get out games at a campground or an RV park with strangers. And so leaves playing games with my family or playing games with my friends, and my friends all have games, right? So yeah, and, you know, maybe I'll get one. You know, I'll get one gameplay, unless it's one of our classics, right? Like,
yeah,
Llama or,
which we did play this weekend,
Ink and Gold. I don't remember playing Llama. Did I play Llama?
You didn't play with us, but I took it downstairs and played with some people.
I didn't think so, because I wanted kind of to teach people Cat in the Box. But I think the only window I had where there were people available to play games who weren't already in games or weren't, taking a break, were people who don't like trick-taking games. So I was like, okay, never mind.
I don't like trick-taking games, but that one I like. Like, I just generally don't, but man, that one's pretty fun. Not because I don't like them. It's because my brain doesn't function the way that needs to work with that thing. You know, there's a difference, but, yeah. So I agree with some things too about sometimes buying a game on a theme just because you like that theme, especially if it sounds like something was a Kickstarter and the art was pretty good. Just because you like that thing is oftentimes a reason to buy a thing, you know, like, obviously I've bought a lot of D&D game themed games. And oftentimes they're not great, but you know, I want to play the D&D ones in the past, not so much anymore, but, or, X-Men games or whatever it might be that has a theme that I like. And they may not be great, but I still buy them because I like, as Troy said, speaking specifically to the X-Men game we played, he says, you're picking up Wolverine and this really cool thing and you're playing him down on the X-Jet. That's kind of just cool. I don't know why it is. It just is. In that case, the game is good, but in many of the cases, they're they're not that great, you know, but you still like, it gives you a couple points in the game that you just kind of like, you know, or the artwork.
Right.
So we did play that one. Another one I played, and this one I actually kind of want to talk about a little bit about. It's called Masters of the Universe. If you're a fan of He-Man, you should do that a Google on this one, the Masters of the Universe board game, because it was a Kickstarter thing, and our buddy Dave went all in on it, like paid the max money on all the pieces and parts and everything. So they've got an actual huge Grayskull that you can play. It is, and it's impressive to just look at the parts and pieces. Again, if you're a He-Man fan, go do a little Google just for the look of it. It's pretty cool.
Which do you know which subtitle this was?
I think it's just called Masters of the Universe is what the box art said. It's a good question. I haven't Googled it since then because I just, you know, admired all the stuff. And it's not the current He-Man. Not based on the current He-Man with this, I can't think of his name, Silent Bob. What's his name? The
Kevin
actor, director. Smith. Kevin Smith. Yeah, on Netflix have relaunched He-Man, but this is the old, like, 80s He-Man stuff. Well, so the game is a very straightforward scenario-based game. So the main book has a lot of scenarios that you play. It plays with four players versus it's a many versus one thing where there's four players and then one other player plays the bad guy, similar to something like or the enemy, I say, so similar to Imperial Assault has some of those kind of things, and or you can play with an AI, like there's a AI card type thing where it tells what the AI will move or what the you know, to directs the other bad guys. So you don't have to play the other side with one person, but you can. But you get scenarios. So you have a big book and it sets up the scenario much like a Gloomhaven type thing would do, where here's the map, here's how you set it all out, here's all the boulders or the things you have to put it out. And then your objective is to go into the, you know, go over to the little village, find and save the kidnapped girl, or save the kidnapped guy, and then bring them back, you know, safely. And all the while, the other person is trying to stop you with their bad guys, with Skeletor and his armies. And each scenario is different. And the book looked like there was just tons of them. So all of that looks really great. And it's hard to decipher here what the normal game looks like, because I don't know what it looks like without all the really stupid, expensive Kickstarter pieces that he had, which is really impressive. But it's very, very nice. The game itself is also very straightforward. I was just really super impressed. You see a game like this and you're with all the millions of parts and pieces and scenario books and everything. You're thinking, okay, we're in it for a long haul on this one. It really wasn't complicated at all. The instruction booklet was maybe 20 pages, and that's with everything ad nauseum, a FAQ in the back, all the setup and things. So maybe 10 pages of actual rules. Mm-hmm. And those rules, I will say some of the rules are nebulous, so it could have used a few extra pages for clarity. But the rules to the game are very straightforward. Every person, just in a nutshell real quick, every person has two actions. One of those, so action points that you can use to take a few different kinds of actions. One of the actions is move. Every single person has the same move three spaces. Another action is attack. Everybody has a basic attack on their card, and it's usually just three dice. They're special dice that you roll. Three sides are melee attack, two sides are ranged attack, and one side is a wild, so it works for both things. And to attack somebody, you just have to, if you're attacking with a melee weapon, you roll the dice, however many dice it says, say three. And if you do two swords for a melee attack, then you do two damage. Very straightforward. If a person has 1 point of armor, he takes one less from that. Very, very simple. If you're shooting range, do you have to shoot range stuff? And then as the rounds progress, we only did five rounds it took to do the game. Four rounds. As the rounds escalate up, you're getting up, you unlock a power. And your character you have will have, like, say, three different powers that they can have throughout the course of the game. And when you first unlock a power, you only have two cards that are your powers, and you can look at them, pick which one you want, and put it on your character sheet, and that's the one you pick. And they're also very straightforward. They cost a little bit of resource, like a mana or something, that you can get for the initiative tracker, which I'll say in a minute. But again, that's the only other action. So you have move, attack, basic attack, and then one of your special attacks that you can do every round. And you pick two of those. It's very, very, very simple. But each, it still maintains the ability that every character is feels very different. Their special powers are all very, 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 very varied and different. And they make them all unique. Everyone on the board definitely felt like they were being played differently. And it might be because of his Kickstarter thing. There are a ton of them characters. There's easily 30, if not more, characters that you can pick from and play with. Maybe 40. And that might be 40 good guys and 40 bad guys. There's just so many. And just zooming through the cards when I was looking for characters, it's like the entire He-Man catalog. And first off, you have to laugh at half the names are just so 80s goofy. And made for toys, clearly. But they were just so unique. I'll give one example. I played Tila, one of the main characters, and her first special ability she was able to do was I took an action and I summoned two guards, two other guard minis that I put next to me. And then I could use that action again next round to activate them, and they just walk forward and attack and basic attack type things. So she basically controlled guards. And then when she got a second ability, I could have chose to either make Tila do a spinning attack and attack everything around her, or have the guards like do a charge or stun or something. So you really, really had a lot of variation with just this one character that's different than somebody else. And I really, really liked that a whole lot. The last thing about the way the gameplay works is that it has an initiative thing where your team, there's eight. So if you're playing with four players, there's four people. And then the other player who's playing the bad guy has four turns too. So he picks all of his actions and place them in a line. And then we place all of our actions in between his actions. And that's the order that it goes into. If you go earlier, you get zero resources. If you go in the mid, you get like two resources for it to trigger your powers. And if you go last, you get three resources. So it's a balance of, do I want to go early and fight the bad guys or go last and maybe miss out on some things but get some resources for next round? And that's the whole game. We played it twice. Mm-hmm. And we really enjoyed it the first time. We really enjoyed what we were doing. It felt like good, but we were learning as well. And then about 20% into the second game, I first realized, and then everybody else kind of did, is that you don't really play a lot. As simple and as streamlined as it was, the other person playing the other team, like playing the computer or whatever it is, the AI, takes a long time. He's got a ton of options. He's controlling a ton of minions. And the guy that was playing it, Mike, was really good and he was doing his best. He wasn't like analysis paralysis on too much at all. He was actually doing it very well, but it's just a long time. And the first game, I only took three actions in the entire game. I took three turns with those very limited things. And the game went for about an hour and a half to 2 hours. Maybe an hour and a half, I'll say. And it was like an hour and a half of time to only get three turns. And on our second time where we kind of knew what we were doing more, or we knew the game really well, I only took four turns. And in between those turns, remember, four turns for an hour and a half means I'm not doing anything for about 15 minutes before my turn again. And I don't do anything off turn. There's no interaction. There's no thing I can respond to. There's nothing like that. So that just left me with this feeling of like, everything is great here, but I just don't want to play this again because I don't want to spend an hour and a half not doing anything and then getting bored, being on my phone. And that's turned into something lately that I just can't handle in games anymore, unless I'm really, really geared up for it, where you're just not doing anything for a very long time.
Yeah. I mean, there are situations where you like that because you're free to get up from the table when it's not your turn. But then it's like, what are we even doing? Right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it doesn't keep you in it. And I really, really give a lot of extra points to games that can keep you going off turn or keep you interested for some reason. And this one just did not have that. So that really, really bogged down my review of the game. I was all about, like, this is really excellent. I would bring it to our other friend group and start, you know, see if I can get a hold of it, because there was so many positive to it. Very simple to teach, very straightforward, super varied. But then I just can't recommend it based on that downtime. We thought maybe, ultimately, when we're all done and playing it, that maybe it's just one of those games that's better played with like three people, you know, or it's a two-player game or something like that. Just play with the automated AI deck instead of having somebody else play the other stuff.
Right.
And maybe that would, you know, speed things up.
Yeah. If I'm looking at the same version that you played, Board Game Geek has it at 1 to 5. Community says 1 to 4 and best with 2 to 3.
Yeah, definitely 2 to 3. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we played with 4 people total. You know, one of them was the other person, and I will say it's hard to say if a game is balanced around. But the scenario we played it twice was a basic brawl type thing, and there's a huge advantage to the bad guys. Like it feels like you're overwhelmed all the time. The last thing I wanted to say about this game before is that people kept trying to compare it to Conan or Batman, which is a kind of a big box game that people have bought. But it's nothing like that. Those two games are basically all centered around whoever is playing Batman or whoever's playing Conan is super powered and is doing everything and is amazing. And everybody else playing is just kind of giving him plus ones or doing very minimal amount of stuff. And so Conan or Batman can be awesome, which is, in my opinion, not that fun, especially if you're not playing it all the time, where you can, you know, switch out who's playing Conan. But this one is not like that at all. He-Man actually was the one that died twice in both games. He's just as powerful as anyone else. It's just the same kind of stuff. He just had different kind of abilities, which was that. Anyway, there was a lot for there, but Masters of the Universe, maybe with a lower player count. Otherwise, I don't know. I'll see it because Dave owns it and he's going to probably keep it forever for all that thing. But I'll see if we can't play it with just three people sometime.
Sure.
And then maybe report back that one. But that was all I think I had for new games at ICGCon. There wasn't a whole lot of new games.
The only other one I had that was, it's not new, but I don't remember if I've ever played it before, is Sheriff of Nottingham.
Oh, I saw that at Gen Con many years ago. Is it fun? Or does Mike own it or something? I can't remember.
I think maybe Mike owns it. Okay. It's a bluffing game, which I am not good at. But the theme is basically that you are all merchants, and one of you is the Sheriff of Nottingham. And it goes around, right? The sheriff rotates. And you play two rounds of everybody being the sheriff twice, right? Well, two rounds of everybody being once, right? So everybody gets to be the sheriff twice. You have gold. You have a little bag. It's like a fabric envelope for cards. And then you have goods. You have a hand of goods that you are bringing into town to sell. And you have to, kind of like liar's dice, you put cards in the pouch, you give it to the sheriff, and you tell him what's in it. And he has to decide I was playing with all guys, so not they have to decide whether they believe you, right? Are you because there are normal goods that go on your, you have a player card sort of, and it's got slots for the four goods. It's like bread, chicken, apples, and cheese.
Okay.
And then there are a bunch of other goods that are red, red borders, that are contraband, right? You're not allowed to bring those into the city, but they're worth more.
Okay.
The normal goods only score in first and second place, right? So the, okay. And I think, no, there's, like, they have coins on them, but that's for the bluffing mechanic. And okay. So you only score apples if you either have the most or the second most apples between all the players.
Okay.
But the contraband has a flat, like, coin value on it. And so the sheriff, when they decide, and they're also bribes, right? Like, you could slide the envelope to the sheriff, put a couple of coins on it, and say, you know, for your trouble, nice. Whatever. And so then the sheriff has to decide, right? Like, are they bluffing me, or are they bribing me because they've got contraband, or is this a fake out where they're putting the bribe on to make me suspicious so that I'll look? Because if the sheriff opens the bag and you have contraband, they take it.
Okay.
And if what's in your bag is exactly what you declared, right? It's like a customs check, right? You declare what's in your bag. Yeah. If what's in the bag matches what you declared, the sheriff has to pay you in gold, like, printed, there are two numbers, like the gold printed value of your cards.
Yeah.
And I think, I forget exactly how the contraband, if you have anything in your bag, that you didn't declare and the sheriff opens it, they take that, and I think maybe you also have to pay, but maybe you pay the bank or something. I forget that part of it.
Okay.
So it's this sort of risk management, and you might get to a point where, you know, it's late in the game and the person who's the sheriff has been a little inspection happy, and so they're low on coins.
Yeah.
And they're not going to challenge anymore because they're like, I can't risk it. Like, if you're not lying, you know, I can't afford to give you all my gold.
Yeah.
And that's basically the game. I'm sure that I'm misremembering some detail of the mechanics.
And how long did it take to play? It didn't seem like it was that long.
No, I don't think, you know, like 20 minutes, maybe. If everybody knows the game, it's definitely 20 minutes or less.
That's not bad at all. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
So overall, good game weekend. And even though we said we didn't play a lot of new games, we still did play several games. And then we played a lot of games that we've played in the past as well. So that's always good. And so much so that it sounds like we're probably going to be extending the day an extra, for the first time ever, an extra day. So next year we'll have 4 days of gaming, just like Gen Con does, except, you know, we always don't do a lot of things on Sunday, but still, I'm looking forward to next year already. Okay, moving forward, let's, I want to talk about another game. I'll say two games real quick. I played last night, we played a game called Fractured Sky. And then Mike and I later on played a game called Blitzkrieg World War II in 20 minutes. Fractured Sky could spend a whole lot of time, so I don't really want to. It's a fun game. It's got a lot of minis. I know Mike bought it on Kickstarter. It was a pretty pricey Kickstarter. I want to say it was $150 to $200 for the thing. Comes with really cool minis, though. It's a hidden information game. You have little islands on the map, and there is a special victory point called a Starfall that comes down. It's just a victory point for the game, and it's randomly picked. It goes down there, and everybody wants to try to get it. You have numbers. You have from 1 to 10 and 2 zeros, and you take your little ship, and those numbers are circle, and they're magnetic, and they stick to the bottom of your ship, and then you place it down on one of the islands. And you can only have a total of 10 points with your three ships across the entire round. So if I put a 2 here and a 3 there and a 5 over there, that's all I could have out. And then when everybody's placed, you reveal them, and whoever had the highest number wins. Pretty straightforward. Why would you place on other islands, you ask? Because there's also a hidden Starfall or victory point that's hidden that you don't know about. And there is when you go to them and you win a thing, you get resources that you can spend on buying things like getting to peek at where that special island is. You can look at it and see where the hidden objective is.
Sure.
There's goals that you can, there's a hidden goal for the round that gives another victory point. You can peek at that and see what that goal might be, so you know what to do. But you need resources to do that. There's also some extra little minis for, like, you can put a market, and that way you get extra resources if you went on a special island. But the little ships and minis are all varied and neat. Not knowing the hidden number out there is pretty great, because you're doing a lot of bluffing. Oh, I played a 3 on that, or I played a 2, and well, why is he going over here? He looked at the hidden information card where the secret thing is. Is he going over there with something big? So there's a whole lot of that. You don't know what things are unless you get the resources to find out what they are, and then you're guessing what other people are doing. That's pretty fun and exciting. I've not done really great at this game in the times that I've played it, but I still enjoy playing it, and I still have a fun time doing it, and I would play it again. Last night, I think I got 3rd out of 4. And still just enjoyed my time playing it. It's another one of those things that, you know, hey, go look at the box online, guys, because it's really got really neat components, but you're going to pay for them. I think you can buy the cheaper one with little, like, card cutout things, but one of the biggest things about fun things about playing that game are the pieces are so fun and neat to look at. The last one is Blitzkrieg World War II in 20 minutes. It did take about 20 minutes to play. I'm not going to really review this one too much. I'm just going to say that I think it was okay. It's a lot of the things that, like, you have numbers in a bag, almost like dice. Instead of dice, you have the numbers in a bag, and you pull them out, and that's you can play a 1, and he plays against a 3, and the 3 wins. It's a little bit more fun than what I'm describing. I would say I enjoyed playing it, but it's good that it's 20 minutes, because randomness basically rules a lot of it. If you go look it up and you're wondering, is this a good game? I'd say, sure, it's good if it's short, and if you're playing with somebody. We played on the very basic side of the board, and the other side's much more complicated and big, and will definitely be over 20 minutes. I'd say double that at least. And at that amount of time for that game, I would not want to play it, just simply because so much is randomly drawn, what you draw out of the bag. And we played 2 games, and all of them weren't fully, it's not like there wasn't strategy. There definitely was strategy. But when one person's pulling all ones out of the bag, another person's pulling all the 3s out of the bag, it's not much you can do to win, type thing.
Sure.
And that's just how the ball bounces, or the dice rolls, I guess. So I give it a thumbs up for the basic part of the game. And if it's not too expensive, I don't know the price on it, it's fine. But it's not like stellar. Oh my gosh, great. Go out and get that game. All right. We spent a lot of time on games this week.
That's fine. We haven't
expected that.
I think it's been weeks, if not months, since we talked about board games.
Now, our board games, right? No, got them back. Hopefully, when I get to the new house, I've got a really nice big game room, and I'm hoping to really pull some things out. I can extend my table, leave things out a little bit better. I'm really looking forward to playing some more games. So hopefully, we'll have a few more feature highlights of one or two games a month or something. That'll be kind of nice. But let's go back to our thing we always do, though. We actually watched a movie this week.
That's right.
We weren't supposed to, right?
No, we said no movie because of ICGCon, but then realized that recording Thursday. Yes,
because
we recorded the same night that I did that work thing. So it's like,
then you went straight from recording straight into work.
Not straight. I had close. I had like half an hour, I think, of chill, and then and then started work. Anyway, recording late on a Thursday and then trying to record Monday after ICGCon. I thought that we would have a lot to talk about with ICGCon, and we did. You know, have some games, but I played almost no new games. I was I was so fatigued all weekend that I just didn't have the energy to learn a bunch of new games. Mm-hmm. And yes, so we rescheduled to alternate Monday and did a surprise movie. So let's talk about it.
So our listeners don't get to join on this one. What do we pick, Dennis? And let's talk about it.
All right. This week, we surprise watched Blade from 1998 with Wesley Snipes, Kris Kristofferson, and I don't know. I didn't recognize anybody else.
The Stephen Dorff is the main villain.
I kind of recognized him. What is he from?
I think he was for a minute. He was popular in the 90s.
Okay.
But, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't. Right. He looked vaguely familiar, but I did not recognize him from anything.
That movie also got press for the one of the main villain girls was Tracy Lords, and she was a porn star. So when that came out, they're like, oh my gosh, there's an actual porn star. Not that it matters anymore the way things are, but back then it was... Can't have a porn star in your film. she wasn't doing any porn things. She was just a vampire.
Right.
But so this movie, man. I'm gonna skip to the end and say I liked it. Like, I actually had fun watching it, and I think that was because Stephen Dorff was a decent villain. Not that he was like crazy or anything spectacular, but. He had some charisma to him.
Mm-hmm.
And was threatening. He was threatening throughout. He was a jerk. He was more of a smart villain type thing. And Blade was just super cool. He didn't have to say a lot. Who was the actor again? I'm drawing a blank for some reason.
Wesley Snipes.
Wesley Snipes is doing Wesley Snipes, and he was super awesome at it. Like, really cool fight scenes, not John Wick level stuff, and it had several of that 80s and 90s stuff where they're like swinging swords in the air and no one's hitting anybody. Notice that every one of the villains are so carbon copy. They just have all black on, all black ski masks, and wearing all black armor. It's just so corny. I really liked it.
Yeah, it's clearly a product of the 90s, right?
Yeah,
late 90s. There's some old tech, the Zach Morris edition MacBook, and some of that stuff, and just the look and feel, the vibe of it is very 90s. It's very Matrix or Underworld, even though it predates both those movies by just a couple years. A lot of leather, a lot of black, a lot of sunglasses.
Sunglasses,
A lot of, Uzi-style guns, big.
Unlimited bullets type stuff.
Unlimited ammo, pump-action shotguns.
That shoot 17 times.
Exactly.
So crazy.
Exactly. And you don't really get this until the very end, but some pretty rough early CGI.
Oh man, yeah, for sure. Like, I think it does okay on a lot of stuff when there's like a lot of blood, because there's just a ton of excessive blood everywhere.
Yeah, for a long time, for most of the movie, it's very like John Carpenter style practical effects.
Yeah,
right.
And then
like stop motion, really gruesome, like bodies exploding and blood, and some like, you know, stuff is on fire and you can tell that the fire is added digitally.
In the
90s, it looks very unrealistic. But like when we watched The Thing.
Yeah.
Right. And you're like, oh, that's a not as disturbing as the stuff in The Thing, but that style of special effects. And then for the whole third act, it was like, what is it like? Man, I can kind of picture some stuff from that era, and none of it's coming to me. Just like when we used to talk about virtual reality, and you would see, I guess there's some of that with the computer.
Like Hackers. It reminds me
from the beginning, from Hackers. Like when when Deacon Frost is trying to decrypt or translate the ancient texts.
The old computer tech he's using. It's
this
bad.
Very visual. And I was like, why is it displayed this way? Well, you find out at the end that that's a model of a real room. But when it first shows up, I'm like, oh, this is rough. But yeah, it gets into this like CGI blood and stuff that's all just really cheesy.
Really bad, like really bad. When you sit there, you're like, "Oh man!" And even though the computers are great, because, you know, we all have computers in our hands now, 24 hours a day, all the time.
Right.
So we know technology, and even the most lay person can realize that what they're doing with the tech on these films are just real bad and real dumb. You know, you're like, that is clearly people didn't, you know, thought technology was magic back then, and it's not, it's more explained now, so that's all goofy. Definitely a period piece of its thing.
And the one other kind of negative, I'll say negative, and I'll circle back around on this, but the Foley work for the fight scenes, whenever they're using fists or weapons or kicks, right? Not guns is basically what I'm saying. Is very over the top, right? Where like he's like tapping a guy with the side of, and you can hear the sound of like layered in with the, you know, the Foley artist punching a slab of beef or stabbing it or whatever. All the sounds they layered together.
Yeah, trying to make him sound strong,
this
like a
really thick,
powerful,
like,
right,
like thoop kind of sound. That's just over the top. Yeah. All of that being said, Wesley Snipes is doing a little bit of Batman voice.
Yeah.
Not quite Batman
not there
level
yet, but yeah.
But all of that aside, you know, I had fun with this too. Like, it's not, you know, those things that date it are just entertaining now. It'll be interesting. I think this is still in the works, that Marvel is gonna remake this, maybe with Mahershala Ali. And so it'll be interesting, having, you know, rewatched it fairly recently, it'll be interesting to see how the new film compares, because this, I think it's based on a comic or a graphic novel. I saw Stan Lee in the credits. Well, and now Marvel's doing it, so of course it means Marvel. But it doesn't have really any of the trappings of the comic book genre.
Agreed.
It's really just an action film with a, you know, an urban fantasy setting.
Vampires.
With vampires. It maybe goes a little too far into, you know, trying to explain vampires with science and medicine. Although I just got done reading I Am Legend, the short story, and it does a ton of that too. Mm-hmm. Try to explain vampirism without magic.
Right.
Which I guess happens in a lot of newer vampire media.
Yeah, they try to modernize it type thing.
Yeah. But yeah, there are cheesy lines, but that's fine. Like, I'm not expecting mm-hmm. Jane Austen in a vampire comic book movie. Yep. And you get, you know, it goes right into the action. The exposition is a little clunky, but of course they bring in the woman to be like, you know, Bilbo, right? To be the outsider, the newcomer,
your point of view character.
Yeah, you're not necessarily point of view, but like your new guy to have someone for the characters to explain things to. There's still some, you know, what they call maiden butler dialogue, or the as you know, Bob kind of thing, where the when the vampires are talking to each other and they're like, oh, you're not a pure blood, you'll never be, and they explain why he's not a pure blood. Like, that happens in dialogue at least 4 times. I'm like,
right.
I'm like, we get it. He was turned. He wasn't born a vampire. I don't know.
Right.
Apparently, in this mythology, vampires can reproduce. But
Yeah. Right. That was my whole thought. The whole thing is like, wait, can they have babies? What?
Apparently.
Or maybe they're kind of like the Daywalker thing. I don't know. Yeah, they don't really explain
it. Or maybe they don't explain that. You know, except in that's why the pure blood vampires are racist against the villain.
Right.
You know, it might be like a, like an elf thing. I've heard that in fantasy elven mythology fairly often, like, because elves live so long, their babies are very rare.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, maybe.
So well, might be some, but that's
either way. I thought it was, for all, you know, I agree with all of the, I guess we're saying downsides to it, but it's kind of like, that's what you expect. It's kind of like what we said about Mystery Men. You know, there's,
mm-hmm.
If you're just looking at all the flaws, that's not why you're supposed to be paying attention to, because it's just, you know, it's part of the film. And a lot of these can be so cheesy and so bad that it just overrides the enjoyment that you're doing.
Right.
But I never had that. It felt like his connection to Whistler was pretty good. Chris Christopherson was mm-hmm. pretty good. I said Stephen Dorff was pretty good. Even the jokey sidekick that kept getting his arm cut off was pretty fine. I had a fun time doing it. I was like, oh man, we're going to watch Blade. It's not going to hold up. I know it's going to be bad. But I watched it, enjoyed the time. It didn't overstay its welcome. It was just as long as it needed to be, and it was done. It was kind of cool to see that again. The Mahershala Ali Blade, it feels like, I can say that the way that came about was that after he won his like big award, mm-hmm. His Oscar,
Green Book,
he called up Marvel and said, I want to do Blade. I went in. And like, you kind of don't say no to the guy that just won the Best Actor award and is supposed to be the rising star in Hollywood. So they're like, okay, we didn't have Blade on our schedule, but okay, we'll do it. And they announced it, but they also announced a whole lot of things at that time when they announced on that stage, like all the Kang stuff and everything. And then his character was teased at the very end tag of the Eternals, which people didn't like a lot of that. it was just kind of Blade. He actually said a line at the end, whispered it in the back off screen. Okay. And you're
I
like,
never saw Eternals, so
yeah. So did a lot of people, not a lot of people. So I think Marvel has gone through like a bunch of drafts and then just rejected them all from the scripts. Mm. And then like two directors have come and gone and they can't keep people on. And then it keeps being stuck in production hell. And now Marvel, when they're all redoing everything, I don't really know if they're going to want to do Blade. And if it's a hard situation because Ali's the one that suggested it. They were the one announced it. It was all by him. But the longer this goes on, it goes 10 years. He's no longer a spry chicken kid anymore. He wasn't really necessarily in his 20s when he wanted to do this.
Sure.
So you can't have a lead guy that's much older if you plan on having that character be around for a long time. Marvel has tried a lot to get younger people into the roles so that they can stay after the Avengers, you know, went away. It feels not conducive to what their overall strategy has been. So, yeah, we'll see if we get a Blade or not. It'd be fine. I really liked this one. So maybe a modern introducing vampires into it. I don't know. They got to focus on X-Men first and Fantastic Four. One thing at a time.
I'm right. Curious now.
What is it?
I could do this math. So Wesley Snipes was 36 when he made this.
Okay.
And Mahershala Ali.
And they expected it to... Go ahead.
Is going to be 50.
Yeah, he's going to be 50. And they haven't even started filming it yet.
Right.
And they also, at that time, didn't expect to do more movies. It was just one movie, Blade, that was it. That's not how Marvel works anymore, right? Or they just...
Right. Well, they made three Blade movies.
Yeah, they didn't expect to do more than one, but yes.
I mean, he's 10 years younger than Downey Jr., and he was still making Iron Man. But yeah, I get what you're saying, 100%. It's like... It's like when people talk about James Bond, like who's going to be the new Bond. Like you can't just cast somebody who's going to make a movie now, because the Bond movies are all kind of the same. They don't make them every year. They're, you know, more like every 3 years ish, plus or minus. And so you need a guy who's still going to be convincing as a physical, like, you know, Bond can be a little older, right? Like,
sure. You don't want like a 23-year-old Bond.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't have to be a man, but Bond has to be, what's the word I'm looking for? Has to be a little world weary. I mean, he doesn't have to be, but like has some experience, right? Yeah. Like he's not a fresh out of college character. Sean Connery and Roger Moore were both older. Of course, in the 60s and even into the 70s, you could have an older leading man with a much younger leading woman. Like, that was more acceptable than it is now. And it's still, you know, it's fudge, but not as much as in the 60s. But you need an actor who can convincingly play that role for probably a decade.
Yeah.
And so that's why, like, I would love to see, and I'm sure a lot of people share this sentiment. I'm completely blanking on his name. Who was Luther?
I didn't watch Luther.
Idris Elba.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, he's, it's not going to show me here.
I watched the Idris Elba movie yesterday.
I'm on the page for the show. Like maybe when he did Luther, but, 1, 2, 3, like, yeah, he's also in his early 50s. So yeah. Anyway, I'm way off on a tangent with that.
I watched Hobbs and Shaw with him as the bad guy.
Right.
Equally nonsensical, just constant fighting, but fun in its own way. Cool. We didn't actually talk about what we were going to watch next time. I think this was your pick.
This one was mine, so you're up.
Yeah. Let us watch... Let's watch The Tourist. I saw this. I've never seen it. I saw it like almost like a trailer, or maybe it's on a... I don't know what it was. It was on a TikTok. It was like on a 30-second TikTok or something. It was a scene from it. And I was like, what is this? It's got Johnny Depp in it. And I think it's... Julia Roberts. And I was like, what movie are they in together? And this scene looked really good. And then I remember it was a movie that people liked when it came out, but I'd never heard of it since then. So I thought, I'm going to put it on our list. And I have a feeling you probably haven't seen it before.
I remember hearing about this. Yeah. Jolie and Johnny Depp.
Oh, Angelina Jolie. That's it. Not Julie Roberts. Yeah. Yeah. So I was like, what movies were they in together? So here it is. We're going to watch The Tourist for next week. It's like a real movie. Not that we don't watch real movies, but
okay. I don't know what you're trying to say with that, but
sometimes we'll watch goofy movies or just silly movies.
Sure.
You know, it's like this one probably has a plot and a story and a thing. You know, not that like necessarily Blade has a complex plot or, you know, The Pest or something, but they're still enjoyable.
Right.
It's so funny. The Pest, I think I absolutely did not like that film. And the longer it goes, I kind of keep wanting, the more and more it goes away, I kind of want to go back and watch it again. I don't know why.
It probably, if more of the guys had seen it, it would be a perfect ICG Con movie.
True. Yeah, you just got to slowly get... I don't know why I'm bringing that up, but anyway. Anyway, yeah, good stuff. I think that's all we got for this week. We did. So I can say that I'm in halfway through season 5 of Deep Space Nine. The quick Deep Space Nine season 4 recap was good. Nothing really that big a deal. We're moving into the Dominion War. Odo lost his shape changing powers, which was pretty big. He actually, spoiler alert, killed a changeling, which was like, no one can ever kill a changelings. Don't kill changelings. And he did. And he got put on trial by them. We got to see the Jem'Hadar more, which they are actually a very, if not, I would say second only to the Borg, compelling villains. Like, they're just bred and made and everything. They have a good episode where they find a baby and they didn't know who it or what it is. And it grows to adulthood throughout the period of the episode, and it's a Jem'Hadar, and you learn everything there is to know about Jem'Hadar in that one episode. And I'm like, wow, this is like a pivotal thing to watch. It's very, very cool. And you quickly throughout that one episode learn like why they're going to be the foot soldiers, and they're never going to be, you know, it's not like Klingons where there's good ones, there's bad ones. There kind of is in throughout the series, but they're a really good villain is what I'm trying to get at. They're much better than the Klingons overall. And although that's kind of blasphemy for pure Trek purists.
What are the other ones called?
There's the starts with a V. Var or something or other.
Yeah. Vesh. Oh, it's not going to come to me. Because they're, the founders, the changelings, are like the aristocracy, right, of the Dominion. And then they have these ones in between who are like officers. And then the Jem'Hadar are foot soldiers, right? They're born addicted to Ketracel White and just, you know, just soldiers.
Right. Vorta, by the way, is what they're called. The Vorta.
Vorta. I would not have come. Are you sure? I thought the Vorta was that stone, silicone. Maybe that's similar.
No, they're definitely
from original series.
Well, so yeah, the Dominion War, the Dominion is definitely the show's main villains, and you know, it's also, as I said with season three, leans heavily into the moral of the story, even more so. This show overwhelmingly does, and we Odo got Odo. I like Odo a lot in general. Good actor,
sure.
And he got a little bit more progression in that season. I think that Kira Nerys continues to get more and more annoying, even in season four. I really dislike that character. I thought she was fine before, but holy cow, does she have some just terrible episodes in season five, which I'll talk about later. And yeah, it was fine. I'm trying to think if it was this one or season five. It might have been season one. Worf comes in. That might be season five.
Season four or five.
They have the Defiant, which is weird because clearly the Defiant is the answer to, we got to get these people out and doing things besides because the viewers are getting bored of them being on the space station all the time. But it feels like it's, every time they're on the Defiant, it feels like they're mixing shows. Is this a, because it's so rooted on trying to be on the station and everything is about Bajorans and Cardassians all the time. And the wormhole, that when there's episodes when they're out on the Defiant, it feels like, oh, they're not doing this. This is like a mini Star Trek episode, you know, or sorry, not Star Trek, like Next Generation episode or something, or Voyager. Sure. I will say that the commander, now Captain Sisko, is getting better. He was fine. He's a good actor and things, but he's getting more. He just has a presence now. Instead of kind of like always shouting and feeling like he's forcing his command, what he is now, when he's on the screen, he has kind of like a quiet, commanding presence to him. Yeah. And that's just evolved.
I remember I liked Sisko, and people say, I don't know if we said this on the air before, but one of the like turning points for the show is when they let him, why am I blanking on his name? They let him shave his head instead of having hair. And the character improved. But I remember episodes where he would have these, you know, give an inspirational speech or threaten somebody in the war or whatever. And he had a little bit of William Shatner in his delivery.
100%. Yeah. He's definitely doing, I mean, I think that's the way Avery Brooks talks, but
Avery Brooks,
he's a weird dude in real life anyway. But I never disliked Sisko at any point.
No.
And he's definitely a different kind of a leader for this team, which I appreciated and liked. But now I think I'm in through season four, and now in season five, he's actually got a commanding presence by just being there. And that might have been an earned thing, that he's earned his way into, you know, throughout all the episodes, that people respect him because of the things he's done. And he's, you know, we became a Klingon, which was an episode, you know, they put the prosthetics, you know, stuff he did. He fit right in type stuff. You're like, okay, yeah, this is, you get who Sisko is.
Right.
Bashir is still kind of annoying. We always still hit, you know, it's the bad reputation of Keiko is well earned. She deserved. She's really terrible. And, the highlights of still the series in season four is still continues to be the Ferengi. Real big surprise to me. They're, all of them are people that on the outside, you watch a few episodes and you just don't get it. But man, throughout the season, I mean, the entire series, they are just good actors that have good parts, and play them well. And they're the three of them are very compelling. That's Nog, and Quark, and Rom, his brother. Mm-hmm. And all of them seem really dumb if you just watch an episode or two, like I had, cherry pick them through. But it's sure. that slow evolution of the characters and piece by piece and episode by episode that they come along that they actually are fully fleshed out characters. And yeah. it's just bad when the Grand Nagus comes on, then it's then they revert to being a joke, which is what right. they always were. Yeah. But when the Grand Nagus isn't there, then they've got actual story stuff, and it's almost believable how when they talk about it being a financially centered civilization type thing, it's mm-hmm. it still doesn't make any sense to me at all how like a lot in this show how they all go to the bar. Like, how is he even running a bar when there's no money? I don't understand that. And there's like a tailor shop that one of the guys has.
Yeah.
But again, there's no money. So I don't understand any of that. A lot of people do. There's people who got to make a living running supplies back and forth to the things. But again, there's no money. So I just don't understand Star Trek with Deep Space Nine, because it's so much commerce, but there's no money. Maybe you can explain it to me someday.
Yeah, I don't entirely understand all of that, and it definitely is like, you know, things that it evolved over time in the canon, in the lore. You know, I mean, obviously, maybe not obviously, but in Starfleet, right, people don't need the ship or Starfleet or whatever provides, you know, everyone's material needs, right? Their food and clothes and all that stuff. And so people have personal possessions, but there's no, like, there's no trading. There's no capitalism. And I think that's supposed to be true on, like, Earth and most
right?
Federation worlds, but I don't know how far that extends.
I mean, like, Dax will come times and say, a quirk, I'll give you 7 slips of latinum if you do this. And I can't, and every time that happens, I'm like, where does she get her latinum from? Like, does she just go back to her room and just, you know, make it happen in the replicator? Because that just totally takes the money out of it altogether. It just, none of that makes any sense to me.
I don't know how inheritance works with Trill, right? She's been the right. Dax symbiote has been alive for hundreds of years, so you know, who knows?
Money in Star Trek. When you have a thing that they specifically have several times where they say we have surpassed money, just doesn't make any sense when they have a whole bunch of things with money. So anyway, that's a problem. Season 4 was fine. It was good. It's probably pretty forgettable overall, I would say. Into season 5, we'll talk later. Seems to be more enjoyable. The way I understand it is this is when the Dominion War starts, and now they're being I got to the point where the Cardassians have joined up with the Dominion. Spoiler alert, I guess. So the Dominion is full on invading halfway through season 5. They're like, they're done with it. But they're attacking the Klingons, so nobody gives a crud, because the Klingons in season 4 are so dumb. I mean, they're Klingons. I'm not saying they're dumb like they're dumb characters. They just are dummies. They just go out and fight everybody, right? Mm. Oh, I haven't fought anybody for a while, so let's stir up a war, you know? Or the Federation doesn't, you know, wants to stop and open up diplomatic ties. You know what the Klingons do? They go up and blow up a couple space stations. And you're like, they're just so dumb, and they're the worst. And then, you know, everybody who fights them just totally kicks their butt. The only thing that the Klingons have is their cloaking technology, and now everybody in the world has cloaking technology, so they got nothing. They're just a bunch of hotheads that constantly get beat and make stupid mistakes. So, and they're featured heavily in season 4, much to their badness reputation. Okay, so anyway, I speak enough about
badness
to Deep Space Nine. So that's what we got this week.
Yeah, I'm still slowly working my way through The Expanse.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I am in season 5.
Oh, I think, remember, you're supposed to tell me season 6, because that's the one where I stopped.
Okay. I don't think I can describe any of what's going on without spoilers.
Yeah, yeah, right. For the whole series, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of a character named Bobby.
Yeah. She got better. I liked Bobby going forward. I liked her.
Yeah, yeah. She's doing some illegal stuff.
Doing some things. Yeah.
There's an election story.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, nothing I can say will not spoil things.
I'll say that series, I liked everything that was on the screen except when they show the Rocinante people. That's like everything is great. And when you said Bobby, that reminded me of that. Like, oh yeah, there's these other characters that are actually pretty good.
I like Alex.
Yes, I like Alex. Yes, okay.
And maybe a couple others, but yeah, Holden and his girlfriend, what's her name?
I don't even know. Don't bring up PTSD memories for those two.
I don't.
The other guy on there is not too bad either, I guess. He's not.
Oh,
terrible.
Well, I mean, Amos.
Amos, yeah.
Gets a lot of good writing.
He does get a lot of good writing, yeah. So that's fair.
Yeah, so I'm still.
Matter of fact, Amos is my Netflix picture. His picture.
Nice. I started a new show that just started airing. There are 3 episodes out, called Shogun.
Okay.
Have you seen
the Japanese thing?
Yeah. I keep seeing ads for it on TikTok. It's got Anna Sawai, who is the daughter in Monarch.
Okay.
Right.
She's not great in that, at least.
Right. But again, I've only seen 1 episode of this show, so I can't, you know, yeah, I said there are only 3 out, so, you know, we'll see. Monarch, I was nervous when I saw that she was, because I saw a trailer with no actors, you know, no actors I recognized, and I was like, oh, cool, like ancient feudal Japan, kind of, that seems really cool. And then I saw her doing promos for it, and I'm like, oh, not the girl. But then I thought about it, and I'm like, even Kurt Russell is boring in Monarch.
Yeah, right.
And you know, sure, he's a veteran actor who has done a lot of great work. So I don't think I can blame the actor. I can judge the quality of an actor just based on that series.
Very true. That's fair, for sure.
Yeah, this is, it's 1600s, I think, Japan. So Japan is mostly unknown, right? It's like a rumored place, like a not mythological, but like to Europeans, it's mythical.
Yeah.
And the Portuguese have found it, and so they're trading with Japan, but they won't share with any of the other European countries. It's also fairly early. I forget the exact year, but I think it's within a century of the Reformation, you know, Martin Luther and and all of that stuff. And so the tension, the conflict between Catholic countries and Protestant countries in Europe is very high.
Okay.
And this is, I think it's based on a book. There was a film called Shogun that seems to follow the same story, that I want to say was made in like the 80s or 90s.
Okay.
You're following a European. He is, I think he's English, but at the start of the show, he's sailing with the Dutch, Holland Empire, right?
Okay,
one of their ships. And the Dutch are Protestant, and I think probably so are the English at this time. I forget exactly when Henry VIII was. And the Portuguese are Catholic. So, you know, he gets there, but the only other English speakers there are probably Catholic. And they're, you know, like sworn enemies at this point in history. And so he's dealing with that and also dealing with the Japanese. Like, the cultures are completely different, and they even, like, put some dialogue to this effect where both see the other as savage.
Okay.
Right? Like, you know, just because everything about their cultures are so different, right? Like, the Europeans might say, you know, they do horrible things like seppuku, right? Like, like ritual suicide. And the Japanese might look at them and say they, you know, they don't even know how to bow properly and show respect. And so it's just this massive culture clash. But it's, I don't know, it's pretty good so far.
You don't like it?
Get into more details than that. It's, I think, the Japanese characters are all speaking Japanese. The white characters are speaking English.
Okay.
And I don't know if it's supposed to be English or if they're supposed to be speaking Portuguese.
Okay.
To each other, but it's English, presumably for our benefit. Mm-hmm. You know, the viewer. And then the Japanese all has subtitles.
Okay.
So that's, you know, just mentioning that. But it seems very well made. There's a lot of interesting, like, medieval politics, you know, right from the start. I'm going to keep watching and probably report back
on more. That. Yeah, definitely do. It sounds mm-hmm. interesting to me.
Yeah.
Cool, man.
All right. Well, you've been listening to The Front Porch. This is episode 339. Thanks as always to our friends at LRM Online. Check them out for reviews on things. If you want to reach out to us via email and let Michael know why Deep Space Nine is the best or worst Star Trek ever.
Please,
I think people stopped saying that after such series as Enterprise and Discovery.
True. Yeah.
But and I mean, the original animated series was never, I mean, right. it's got some fans, but even I have not watched more than one or two episodes.
Yeah.
What was I saying? Our email address is frontporchpod@gmail.com. If you go to our website, frontporchpodcast.com, you'll find contact forms if you're not into email. I also put show notes to all the movies and games that we talk about, so you can check those out. If you enjoy The Front Porch, please consider subscribing on the podcatcher of your choice. And while you're there, if you would leave us a 5-star review, we always appreciate that. It helps us out a lot in the rankings. As always, thanks so much for joining us. Until next time, I'm Dennis.
And I'm Michael.
For The Front Porch.
Night, everybody.
See you next time.